the best designers have this lifelong learning kind of intrinsic motivational, you know, they're motivated from the inside, right? They're gritty and tenacious and they're problem solvers and they don't need a ton of direction. They can take direction well, but they don't need it all the time. They can also see an opportunity to solve a problem before maybe even their manager would see it.
Hello, Spacers. From Austin, Texas, I'm Christopher Schmidt. And on today's show, I'm talking with Leslie Jensen-Immon, co-founder of Center Center, a user experience design school based in Chattanooga, Tennessee. This fall, the first 36 students are expected to start the school's first courses, helping pave the way for what they hope is the next generation of industry-ready UX designers. Some notes on where I'll be coming up this summer. The CSS Summit is the three-day virtual conference focused on CSS and SAS and their super friend technologies like SVG, Animation API, Design Systems, other preprocessors, and much, much more. I'll be hosting the events, and you can pick up your early bird tickets right now at csssummit.com. Also, Lyft is giving the opportunity to give you, new riders of Lyft, a $50 credit. Just go to christopher.org/Lyft. That's christopher.org/LYFT. Did you know you could set it and forget it with Non-Breaking Space Show? The Non-Breaking Space Show newsletter comes right to your email box when it's ready. All you have to do is sign up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. Also, at nonbreakingspace.tv is show notes and links discussed in today's very episode. And also be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telject. T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. And as always, thank you for subscribing, liking, and telling others about Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. Now, on with the show. Cool. Well, thank you for taking the time out of your day. I was researching your Twitter feed just before we got on here, and I was like, oh, so on the 13th, you said she's going to have a bigger, busy day, busy week. And I'm like, okay. So I was like, uh-oh. So hopefully it was a good week for you so far.
Yeah, we're having these amazing busy weeks. So I'm okay with the kind of busy I'm having right now.
Okay, cool. Well, I want to talk to you about Center Center and how that's going because we've known each other for a long time. Like, we've been part of web education initiatives for one form or another. Like, I think back in, I forgot how long ago it was, but what was it? Was it the Web Standards Projects, Web Education Progress, right? We went through that. We wrote a book. Well, I wrote a chapter of a book, so, which is, I was thankful for that. So, because I didn't have to write a whole book. So that was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Although wrangling, was it like 10 of us authors? It was fun design challenges and such. <I bet. laughs> Aaron Walter and I were just like, we were put through our paces on that one.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so that was the Interact Web Education.
Yeah.
And in books. So that's been something. And then we worked with, Aaron Walter for the web education, curriculum, right? For Web Standards Projects. And so, and then, can you just tell us, and now you work at the Center Center. And that was helped with the funding, I guess. I mean, tell me how much, but the funding of Kickstarter project, right?
Right.
And so, when was the idea for Center Center? Which is, and describe what it is, and then describe how it got the impetus for that project.
Sure. Center Center is a user experience design school for adults, creating industry-ready user experience designers. Center Center, it got started. It's gone through a couple of different names, right? So most publicly, besides Center Center, the school was known as the Unicorn Institute. That was mostly because we needed to be able to talk about it without talking about it, because at that point we hadn't been authorized by the state of Tennessee to be a school. And so if you start talking about yourself as a school before you're actually authorized, you can be fined something like $1,000 a day since you Yeah. So we, Jared and I speak a lot at conferences and we travel a lot, and we just felt like we were probably going to mess up and say the name, you know, and call it a school by accident on stage. So what we did is we really created the Unicorn Institute as our research project, because we thought it was really important to share the kind of research we were finding by looking into what a school really needed to be with other people. And we knew people were interested in what we were researching, and so we wanted to share it, but we had to be really careful about the way we were talking about it. And before that, the internal name for the school was Project Insanity, because we kind of figured you had to be insane to start a school. And little did we know you had to be like extremely insane. So Jared Spool, who's the co-founder of Center/the Unicorn Institute/Project Insanity, and I started this project over, I think, four years ago now. And we are just about to have our first cohort of students. I know, I think a lot of people think we've already started because we are so close to getting started. We've got everything in place. We have curriculum in place and faculty and staff, and we have our facilities in place. And it's just really challenging to figure out all the pieces of a school, to meet all the different kind of legal requirements and do everything the way we want to do them in the way that feels the best decisions we can make for our students. So by doing things really, really right and really being very human about the experience for our students, it's actually taken us quite a long time to get started. But we're very happy with what we've created because of that.
Well, just for those people who are listening who might not have started their own school, can you tell me what pieces have you been that you've been dealing with to put into place, in the last couple of years? So,
right. So there's Jared and I joke about this a lot. We say it's a very good thing we didn't know what we didn't know, because this is one of those projects where if you knew all the things you'd have to do, you might not go down this road. But we knew it was the right thing to do. So we're still extremely happy that we've done it and the way we've gone about it. But there are a lot of pieces. So pieces like getting authorized by the state of Tennessee, we actually had to submit over 13 inches of binders filled with information, including like Jared's and my height and our eye color, and for background checks and making sure that we were really legitimate. And the challenge we had at first with working with the state is the way we thought schools should be, and the way we still think it should be, isn't exactly the way traditional educational environments are, or at least not on the scale of an entire curriculum and an entire school created around project-based learning, competency-based learning. It's the idea of actually working with real clients, real budgets, real deadlines. All of these things make it very challenging to fit into a model that already existed. And we just didn't fit. And so it was this really kind of neat experience working with the state, which we're working mostly with attorneys, figuring out, well, how do you meet the law, and how do you really protect the citizens of that are coming to the school? How do you make sure the students are coming first? And they were helpful, and they were able to educate us on a lot of things. And so we learned a lot about legalese that we didn't know. And we were able to help them see education in a really different way. And it's been an exciting experience, although at times it can be really frustrating because, you know, my background that I can speak to is I'm a designer. And I've owned my own company before, and I've dealt with contracts and that kind of legalese. But I have never been faced with having to learn so much outside of the design world, I guess. I spend a lot of times now in spreadsheets. I look at loan amortization charts. I do things that that had me questioning for a while. Like, am I a designer anymore? And then I would say that, and my husband or my mom would be like, Leslie, you're designing an entire school. Now you're designing the user experience of a school. We really broke it down into ways that we had never, that most people don't, most educators don't have the opportunity, the resources, the time to be able to really look at it in such a holistic way. So we worked with the state of Tennessee. We have been authorized, which is great. We have a nice relationship with the state, which is very nice. We've done things like we interviewed hiring managers even before we decided to really, really go forward with the school. And we asked them questions like, what's the difference between a good designer and your best designers? And what we realized is a lot of the skills that make a good designer really, really the best are soft skills. And we realized most curriculum don't really address that on an everyday basis, right? You need to learn how to communicate with people, how to work with them on a project. We in our professional worlds rarely work by ourselves on anything, but a lot of time in educational environments, that's what you know is all individualized learning. If you are individual learning, not individualized, there's a difference. So it's a lot of learning by yourself, and if you work with somebody else, you're cheating. Not at Center. The goal is to work with other people to really build those communication skills. So we met with hiring managers. We found out what they really wanted. They wanted us to graduate students that could sit through a meeting and not look like they're going to die.
like what do you mean in terms of just being bored to death or just?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. So the simple act of just being engaged.
That's during meeting. Exactly. Engage, show up prepared.
Oh, wow.
Be engaged. You know, put your iPhone down or your other smartphone, whatever device you've got.
Is that a 6-week course on putting the iPhone down? Because I think I would fail that course. So.
You know, it's really interesting. So at Center, most of our meetings are technology free. The ones that aren't are usually when Jared's joining us from someplace around the world and he's Skyping in. But we don't have phones. If somebody has to have their phone, say like a kid's sick, you know, or they're waiting for the mechanic to call, those kind of things, it's actually brought up at the beginning of the meeting and the person apologizes like, hey, sorry guys, I've got this emergency thing happening. I have my phone here. It's on vibrate. I hope not to have to take a call. But if I do, I just wanted to let you know. And that's a really different kind of work environment. It does mean that our meetings at Center are extremely tight. We get a lot done and they don't run over because we've got agendas and we stick away from the technology. Well, those kind of principles, those ways that we do things at Center, we've set it up so that the students can learn how to do those things. So the students will actually, a lot of their kind of class time, and I put that in air quotes. And so since you all are listening, class time was in air quotes. Because class time here is really coming, it's basically getting ready to, you know, you come to work. And it's a work environment. It's set up so that they can come to meetings, they can run meetings, they have practice in doing actual things that they're going to need to do once they graduate.
Well, that's amazing. Cause like, I feel like, I mean, is that it? Like soft skills is the only thing that takes a good designer from a best designer is just communicating with people, soft skills, being prepared, like, and thinking about other people, like, and having empathy, I guess, is that really what the main difference is?
Those are the main differences, right? The thoughtfulness, the professionalism, how to conduct yourself as a professional with other professionals. Those are the main differences. Of course, the best designers have this lifelong learning kind of intrinsic motivational, you know, they're motivated from the inside, right? They're gritty and tenacious and they're problem solvers and they don't need a ton of direction. They can take direction well, but they don't need it all the time. They can also see an opportunity to solve a problem before maybe even their manager would see it and come to the manager with, hey, look, I saw this as a challenge and I've taken a first stab at it. And then they're open to feedback. They're open to constructive criticism. They're able to give constructive criticism. They're able to work with people that don't know about design, but speak to them in a way that resonates and helps create consensus around design, helps move process forward, work with different kinds of stakeholders, work with their teammates. A lot of that is soft skills. in traditional education, there's not a lot of time for that. You know, it's a lot of like, let's learn this technical skill or this piece of software, or let's learn this really specific thing about color or typefaces, which are all important. And our students will learn those things, but they're going to learn them while also constantly practicing their soft skills. So our students will graduate. It's a two-year program. They'll graduate having put into action those soft skills and the technical skills for the full 2 years. So we're graduating junior designers, junior UXers, but they'll have a lot more practical knowledge than I think other students might if they were graduating a different kind of program.
And that's through actually doing, you said, mentioned earlier, like how they'll be learning these soft skills is through actual projects with actual deadlines. Is that right?
Yeah. So our students will work with partner companies. So we've got companies like Northrop Grumman and MailChimp already on board. And our students will work with their teams on real projects, mostly backburnered projects, things that they haven't been able to get to, things that if the student's solution wasn't the right solution, it's not going to throw the business's way off track. But something that the business, you know, the company cares about enough to really put some maybe development resources behind to make sure that, if the solution is the right solution, that it actually gets built out and our students get to work with their development teams. So it's really important for us, for our students, to make connections to real people outside of our center staff and faculty. We call our faculty, actually, they're called facilitators, not teachers, not professors. We do not believe they are sage on stage, stand up and know it all. We just had a meeting about curriculum today with two of the facilitators that we have on board already. And we have an amazing team here. They're so fantastic. And we were talking about today is if we do our job right, we will say things like, I don't know, let's figure that out. Or, what do you think? And ask those questions to the students more. If we're successful, we're asking those questions more than we're telling the students what to do. Like, we're helping the students really build that skill of lifelong learning, because when they graduate, yes, we'll still be resources, but they need to be their own learning resource. They need to figure out what makes a credible source of material. How do you evaluate an article to know if the argument that they're making is the argument, is it really relevant? Is it one-sided? Is it really thought out in the way it needs to be helpful with your career? Those kind of things.
Yeah. So, well, that sounds great. I mean, it sounds like a good area just for learning, and also just for being a, I don't want to say the word playground, but I guess testing ground would be a better phrase. But it sounds like play to me. It sounds like fun.
I think we're creating the school. I keep thinking it's like the school I really wanted to attend, mm-hmm. and the school I really wanted to teach at. So our facilitators are jazzed, right? They're so psyched. We're doing a real big push on some finalizing, like some tweaking of the curriculum. And they're so excited about it because it's asking these really tough questions. You know, how can we give enough structure so that the students learn what they need to learn, but without being prescriptive, without telling the students, here's your assignment, now do it this exact way, right? Because I don't know. Really great managers, really great bosses, they trust their people to do good work and they don't micromanage, right? And so our students are going to graduate and they're not going to have someone say, this is exactly how you have to do it.
I mean, like the best bosses are the ones that just let you know. They just assume that you either know what you're doing or you will find out very soon how to do
what to do.
And that, and then if you need help, to ask for help, but not to ask for help every 2 minutes.
So. Exactly. And so our students are successful when they can be able to, when they graduate and they're from day one, they are a resource and a positive influence within the team that they're hired versus a drag on resources. You know, our students should be really able to add to the team that they go to, and not, I've seen it before. The hiring managers we talked with says sometimes it takes 6 months to a year to onboard somebody because they don't have the soft skills. Like everything from their younger hires, their parents are showing up to interviews with their, yeah. Parents are calling up and asking for their kids, like 26-year-olds. Wow. Why haven't they had a raise? These are the kind of things we're going to teach our students not to do.
Yeah. That really happens?
Yeah. We've heard that actually multiple times.
Oh my gosh. Seriously. Okay.
Yes. Seriously. It's frightening.
Like at companies that I would know of.
Was that right? Yeah. So Jared and I started, when we started this, we interviewed hiring managers at Sears and Marriott and oh goodness. Now I'm starting to draw blanks, but all these really huge big companies, because that's, we see our students actually graduating and working with larger companies that already have an understanding of the importance of UX design, and so that they already have some senior leadership around UX, mm-hmm. because our students will be able to learn more and to grow more and develop more. Since we're graduating junior UX designers, it's really great if they have leaders and mentors already within the company to learn from, to really help take them to their next level. And so a lot of these larger companies like a Northrop Grumman already have big teams in place for this. And they're doing super neat things that I'm not allowed to talk about, but they're super cool.
So I have a question for you. And this doesn't directly relate, it's not related to Center, but like, so in talking to these companies, yeah. I don't work for every company yet or in the future. So if a UX designer comes on board and they don't have the soft skills, how do they teach soft skills within 6 months? I mean, or to bring them aboard, or?
You know, this is what they struggle with, right? That's why they're really interested in talking with us, because they haven't been all that successful. And then what happens is the person doesn't get retained, and hiring is expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, when you to bring someone on board and try to onboard them, that takes time. It takes money. You know, it's just the things that I've seen them do are bring junior folks to meetings, have conversations with them. They've had to show simple things like how to have a proper handshake, how to have a business dinner. There's things that are a lot of us take for granted, you know, like which fork to use when you sit down at a banquet kind of meal. And these are kind of things that when you're working in a larger corporation, you do face. Actually, even Center is not a large corporation, but today I went to, you know, a luncheon. I actually ended up sitting next to a high school student and, you know, who didn't know which fork to use and stuff. And I got to teach her the, you know, when you put your fingers together and you make the B for bread plate and the D for drink, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome. All right.
Like, yeah. Oh, that's a trick. So you put take your forefinger and your thumb, hold them together and hold the other finger straight up, and you create a B and a D. That's why, you know, your bread plate's on the left and your drink's on the right.
Oh, nice. There you go. See,
so these are the kind of practical tips that students will learn at Center. But it's like so cool. You can just do that under the table. Nobody sees you doing it. And you can remember, okay, I'm not going to, because it's so embarrassing when you eat somebody else's bread.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I got past an embarrassment a long time ago. I just grabbed it and go.
But we will have opportunities for students to learn these kind of things. Okay. And because it's just nice. It's, you know, there is something to business etiquette, and you can get, you can really push your career if you have all the skills. So you have the design skills, right? You've got the technical know-how, you know, all of that. And then to have the polish of having the soft skills with that, you know, it's just, your opportunities are just endless, right? They're boundless.
Right. Cool. Yeah. So it sounds like soft skills are just kind of like etiquette in a way, right? So if it's not etiquette, I guess just
some of it is.
Yeah, so like I guess etiquette would change, you know, depending on, you know, nationality or like culture that you're working in too. So but basically stuff like, you know, dinner culture in the Western, you know, America is going to be different than otherwise. But it seems kind of understandable. But like just having, being able to work with people and relate to people seems kind of universal, like you said. So
yeah, there's some universal things, and then there's definitely cultural things. And our students, as they work with different kinds of companies that have different cultures, that have different that work with different with their different clients that are located in different areas, our students are going to be exposed to a lot of real world situations, because it is real world. We're not, you know, making it up. Yeah. And they're going to have to learn how to adapt. Mm-hmm. And being able to adapt is a really neat skill to foster, and to be able to do it in a place where learning is very much at the core of everything that happens. It's safe to make a mistake, right? So if a student missteps, you know, maybe they don't approach a conversation in the most effective way. Well, our facilitators can help give them feedback. Let's talk about this. What could have gone better in the future? Or maybe it's a partner company, and one of the employees there has the opportunity to kind of mentor the student and say, you know what, your design work is amazing. Your tech skills are right there. Mm-hmm. And if you could just learn how to do X, Y, and Z, or just X, you know, then you are so hireable. And you know what, I'm able and willing to help you learn this skill. And those are the kind of opportunities I think are really, really special. They're about building relationships over the long term. It's not just about a capstone project, right? Our students are working with professionals in the industry from day one.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's good. I do want to probably pin on that, and probably may come back to that later on, but I want to go back and probably at the higher level a little bit for Center and just ask just the lessons learned in setting up school in terms of a traditional school and being served like not a traditional school of, you know, just I guess I'm going to say college or whatnot. Like, you know, I went to got my master's degree at for new media technology, right? So, but even then, when I was there, I had to actually do my own special courses because technology had changed so much that the curriculums that were available to me, the lessons courses that were there, like I couldn't, you know, there was just like antiquated like HTML table layouts or whatever. So it's terrible. So, but not terrible. Sorry.
Face for gifts.
Face for gifts. Oh my gosh. I love them so much, but I'm like, I'm past that. Okay. But
they have a place in my heart. Yeah. I kept this space for my space for gifts.
So, but I'm just thinking about the challenges that you've had to go through just to set up a unique school that is flexible, maintainable, but also covers, you know, like the soft skills, hard skills, also protecting students. I would wager from doing projects on real budgets. That's like, you know, students always do projects, but for real clients or external company, that it's not really terrible or outside the realm of possibilities, because you know you have like, you know, I can see like everyone like Georgia Tech or Berkeley, you're working with, you know, outside vendors for science projects. But I was just wondering, you know, it's a little outside just, you know, normal graphic design school. So what were the challenges in trying to get that certified versus, you know, your background in teaching?
So there's all kinds of challenges, things that I hadn't thought about when we. Things as simple as our students have team rooms that have locked doors and that have, and the doors are not see-through and there's no windows. There's windows out, but not like in, like on the door. And things, because we're working like with the Northrop Grumman, for example, or another company like that, you know, we're working with a lot of information that can't be shared. Or at least that can't be shared maybe while the students are working on the project. And so
information, you mean just the project information?
Yeah, like it's like that. It could be like on a non-disclosure-y kind of thing, right?
Gotcha.
It could be some proprietary information. It could be working with a financial institution that our students have one computer that might have access to data that is secured that they're not, that none of the other students have access to. There's all these weird cases that we're finding that our partner companies and potential partner companies want to make sure that their information and their clients' information is safe. So things like we had to take into consideration making sure there's a lock on the door that has a key, you know, and only certain people have access to that room. The people, these are really crazy things that I never had to deal with this when I've taught before. I had projects that were basically working a lot of times with nonprofits that it wasn't like secrets. You know, it's get this information out as to many people as you can so that people get excited about the nonprofit and put more money into it. But the projects that our students might work on, some of them could be restricted in a public way for some time and then release. You know, there's all timing. They could be working on stuff that's sort of top secret for a while. Those are kind of weird things we didn't know we were going to have to think through. We've been thinking through, well, then how do you show that in a portfolio if you have non-disclosure stuff? And that's the same kind of real work challenges we see as designers have these days, right? You know, you've worked maybe on some really cool things, but you're not supposed to be talking about them. How do you have a portfolio? And our students, we're going to be faced with asking and answering those questions. I'm trying to think of other things that might be of interest. Like it's just starting a school from scratch. We're not grandfathered in like a lot of schools would be. Like universities might have sort of been grandfathered in, or they have huge staffs and they have lawyers. They've got endowments. They've got all these things like money that, you know, we have really, really lean resources. And we've had to learn from scratch. We don't have a specialist to work with the state of Tennessee. We had to figure out, we look through all the documents, really read it, and do our best to understand what they were trying to mean, and then build those relationships so we could ask the state, what did they mean? We've learned a lot along the way. And it's almost hard to think about all the different things, but there's things like, okay, to open the school, we had to have a facility in place, which means like an actual space with actual, all the furniture and even a physical library created before we could even be authorized as a school. So this is this crazy thing. So like you need money to be able to do that, but you can't, you know, even ask for tuition until you're authorized as a school in the state of Tennessee. So like, it's just these weird rules that totally make sense in one way and kind of break your brain in another way.
Oh, well, yeah. So I guess at some point they're saying like, hey, before we tell your school, you actually have to have a school building, but in order to get a school building, you need to get money, but we can't get to it yet. So I totally.
Exactly. So they, you know, the state of Tennessee, they sent representatives here, checked out the school, the actual space. They actually came to Chattanooga.
The official furniture checkers, is what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. They actually, they make sure your fire code is up to, and your health and safety. Right. So it's just really, I mean, if you had told me, I don't know, 5 years ago that I would be doing this on this level, maybe I would have believed you, but it just is this crazy things. I think, okay, our biggest hurdle, and what's been really such this huge, huge design problem for us. So we look at the whole school, being that we're all designers, we look at everything as a design problem or a design challenge and how do we solve for it. There's a lot of research involved and then a lot of iteration, some sprints, you know, we do a bunch of different kind of design methods, to make the design school happen, which seems fitting. But our biggest challenge is student financing, because so we're authorized by the state, but we're not accredited yet by a national accrediting body, because you actually have to have a school going with the students enrolled and coming to class for at least about 2 or 3 years before you can even apply for accreditation, mm-hmm. which is not a cheap process. Right. It's not an easy process. And you have to be accredited for your students to be able to have access to most of the nice loans, the loans that have good rates.
Right.
And so we had started looking at, okay, well, private loans. And when we first started the school, there was a lot more options for private loans. But things started to dry up because other schools have been doing some pretty shady practices with student loans. And we've all heard this, right? And I don't think student loans are bad personally, if as long as you are preparing your students to have a career and have a job that can actually pay back the student loans, mm-hmm. then that seems fair. But a lot of schools were giving out a lot of loans, but not having students take courses and programs that would actually get them jobs. So there's, you know, that's just not fair. So private loans started driving up. And so what was left were private loans that had very predatory practices. So we were talking with different companies that were like, yes, we will lend to your students for 28% interest rate. And Jared and I are like, no, that makes us want to vomit. You know, like that we can get credit cards better than that. This right. is ridiculous. We're not going to do this. And Jared and I made a decision that if we couldn't figure this out, like we just would, we weren't going to saddle our students with this kind of burden. We were going to do everything in our power to make it right. And we always ask this question, if it's from the curriculum to student financing, whatever, it's the question is, what's the best decision for our students? And when you have that like central question, that really for us has helped us stay focused on the mission. The mission is to have these students that graduate and they're industry ready and they can be hired. They help the businesses that we that we're working with. You know, they help design. It's all good. 28% interest rate was not the best decision for students.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
No, it was terrible. Right? Like it's not okay. So. We are actually in the process of starting our own revolving student loan fund.
Wow.
So not only are we starting a school, we're creating a new way of lending. So it's like an innovation in learning needs an innovation in lending, right? That's where we're at. I will tell you, there's nothing easy about this. Okay, so. I don't even like, you ask, like, yes, for all of you listening who haven't started a school before, my biggest advice is maybe don't. But if you do, really keep your students and your stakeholder, your target audiences, right? For us, it's our students and the hiring managers. And the reason we keep hiring managers, like what are the best decisions we make for hiring managers? That's another question we consistently ask, is because the best thing for our students is to be able to be hired. Mm-hmm. So we've created a curriculum that meets the needs of hiring managers because that's the best thing for our students. We are creating a revolving student loan fund with lower interest rates. Not only is that the best idea for our students, but it's the best thing for hiring managers because they're not having to pay inflated salaries to cover some crazy loan. Right. So these are the kind of things. So to get started with the school is taking a lot of different steps, everything from curriculum to facilities to hiring to figuring out what are the best hiring practices. It turns out most of the people in the UX world, it's just not there yet. We haven't quite figured out what the best hiring practices are. And over the last 4 years when Jared and I were working on this, we've actually come up with some amazing information about that. And so there's all these things that we have learned and we're starting to create because we've had to. You know, you have to, if you're going to hire really great facilitators, you have to have a really great hiring practice. If you're going to, you're going to really serve the students by having financial aid that works for them, you've got to create your own student loan fund, you know? And so we're in these worlds that I never really knew I was going to be. But I will tell you, it's exciting and it's amazing. And every single day, I wonder where the time went because the days go so fast, faster than anything I've ever done before. It's just like, okay, wait, what? The day's over? You know, my to-do list is still really long.
I have to ask, where do you start by starting up a loan fund for students? Like what's steps one, two, and three for that?
First, you cry and console yourself that you're going to have to do this. Okay.
That's your preparation. That's
for your preparation. Yeah. And then from there, we asked really smart people, really, I don't know if they were smart questions, but we asked them a lot of questions. And so it turns out people ask us a lot of times, like, why are you doing this in Chattanooga? You know, you should be doing this in a bigger city, Brooklyn, San Francisco, Chicago. You get all this, right? And really, Chattanooga has been an amazing place. Not only do we have the fastest internet in the Western Hemisphere, and it was not Google, even though, you know, we use Google products. It was our electric power board, our local municipality that had the foresight to see that having access to the internet and at these kind of speeds. We have 1 gig up, 1 gig down simultaneously. Actually, now in Chattanooga, we have 10 gigs available. We don't do that yet because there's no need for us, but we have it there. So but the reason, besides all this technological goodness that's happening and innovation that's happening in Chattanooga, it's just the people here are so incredibly helpful. People ask us all the time, what can I do to help get the school started? What can I do? And they're not expecting anything in return, except the Chattanooga spirit is, of course, we will help all the people that have helped us, and we will help more. That's just the way things are here. And that works with the way, with who we are as a company and as like individuals in the company. So it makes a lot of sense for us. But we've met with bankers, with foundations, with nonprofits, and we kept figuring out like, okay, well, this is, maybe we could go this path. Maybe we can go this path. And like, we talk with attorneys, what's the best way to do this for the students, you know? And by asking really smart people questions, we start to end up in around the table with the right people. And so we're working towards setting up this loan fund in a way that we don't have to set up our own nonprofit. Chattanooga has one of the, if not the greatest, like per capita nonprofit ratio. Like, we have a lot of nonprofits in Chattanooga. So when we started this, we were really asked by leaders in our community to do our best to work with other nonprofits where we could and not set up our own unless we absolutely had to. So that's what we've been doing. And then the steps after that are find someone that understands your mission, that really wants, that sees the need for it, that sees how it can help the local community as well. And set up all the legal agreements around that and figure out things like loan criteria. If you're taking credit score into account, if you're having co-signers or guarantors or both. I mean, there's just like, I don't know, there's so many details. It's kind of, it's mind boggling. Oh, wow. And you know, and sending it all back and forth to the lawyers to make sure, because this isn't necessarily our background. So making sure everything, all the decisions are being made, again, that honor the students and the hiring managers, and make sure that we're making those kind of really great decisions.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I was just curious as to where you start for that. So, and it seems like everywhere is the answer for that. So,
yeah, you know, there's a lot of that approach. It's everywhere. And bring all the information together and then do the best to make it something that it's very complicated on the back end. Everything that we're doing, there's nothing that's been really simple, but our goal is to make it as simple for the students and the hiring managers. You know, they don't need to, I mean, they listen to this and they can hear everything that's gone through it. If they want to know, you know, we're very transparent and open and we'll share, but that they don't have to feel this part of it. You know, this pinch, they can just have a seamless experience of getting a loan that makes them feel really great about the loan. Because so here's our plan with the loan. The plan is, as the students pay back their loan, they're actually giving forward. So the money goes back to the loan fund so that it can help another student in the future go to school. So, and we're going to be doing some major fundraising to make that loan, like to populate that loan, to really help the first group of students, second group of students. And then as these students graduate, get these really great jobs, they'll be giving another student in the future a chance, an opportunity, just like somebody gave to them. And that to me is such, I mean, that's where I would have loved to give my student loans back to, right? Something mm-hmm. that felt like I was really doing good.
Right. I think that's awesome. That's probably smarter than, that's way smarter than 20%. So.
Thank you. Yeah, we think so. Right. Only does it feel good.
I don't think you need to tell you that, but yeah, that's way, way smarter than that. So I have a question for you, and you're probably not going to like it in that way, but why be certified? I mean, there's so many services out there that do web education that they're not certified.
Do you mean accredited or
accredited? Yeah, sorry, certified accredited. Sorry, yeah.
So, accredited. the reason we went down the authorization route, again, that's from the state, not a national accrediting body, is because we have to. That is a state requirement. I believe that's a, it might be, getting my laws mixed up in my head. I believe that now all the states have the same kind of process. It's similar. I think each state has a little bit different flavor of it, but I believe recently in the last couple of years, a federal government has said you need to be authorized. A lot of things were happening where some shady kind of fly-by-night schools were setting up, offering, like, making big promises and not being able to deliver.
Maybe I am asking the right question. Let me make sure I'm backtracking just a little bit. Make sure. So there's lots of web education stuff that you get online, say, for example, or are schools that that people like UX materials I get online or whatever. So, and they have UX courses, they have UX, mini courses, if you will, like whatever. So, but they're not certified in any traditional sense, right? Like they're not like in the traditional sense of like saying I go to Florida State or I go to Princeton or whatever like that. So, or if I go to, I was going to say my example is that I used to work for an online design school and they were accredited at New York State, right? So, but there are competitors who didn't even bother with that. So my question is to why is it important?
So in Tennessee, since we're running Center out of Tennessee, legally we have to be authorized. Now we don't legally have to be accredited. There's a difference. So authorized, basically the state of Tennessee is making sure that our students get that we actually deliver on the outcomes we promise. With the promises we make, we actually deliver on them. And to me, that actually, to be a part of that makes a lot of sense, not only because that's the law in Tennessee, but because it's another group of people kind of looking at what you're doing. And the students have this understanding, you come to Center, what Center promises you, you're going to get. And you can count on the state of Tennessee to back that up. So basically, if there's complaints, those go to the state of Tennessee, and the state of Tennessee could actually take our authorization away. And so to me, that's kind of like this nice guarantee. It's a nice thing to know as a student, like you are really going to get what you pay for. You're not going to be taken advantage of. To me, it's a really nice thing to know, especially because we're a new school. You know, it's an unproven, and we know that. We got the state of Tennessee saying we have looked through all their curriculum. We have looked through every single document. We have actually approved staff choices. They don't make the approval based on it's different. It's like we hire, but the state of Tennessee knows who we've hired. They have access to all kinds of records. They can do audits and make sure that the students are being treated fairly, that the grading is fair, that, all of these things are fair to the students. And so if I was a student, to know that makes me go, oh, okay, well, I know that I'm going to get what I was promised. And when you're putting money towards something, it's really nice to have a guarantee. Now, accrediting, the reason if we ever went down that road would be to open up opportunities for people. So currently veterans, the GI Bill, those kind of things, those options, we can't accept at Center yet. And we can't accept international students. There's all these things that when or if we're accredited, we can start offering good opportunities to people in different ways. It also allows us to offer our students financing with the kind of traditional loans that are the non-predatory loans. So there are other options for financing. So again, we haven't totally decided which way we're going to go. And we will revisit that when the time comes with the question, what's the best decision for our students?
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like accreditation is pretty awesome. It's because you know it's going to be, I think as a student, it would be And as a teacher also, it's nice that, you know, it's get bang for the buck, if you will. Like, you get more for what you put into it. So
that's true too. Yeah. I think it's nice to have, even though sometimes it's a pain, it's also really nice to have an outside group looking at what you're doing and then asking really smart questions. That's what the state of Tennessee, they asked us questions that were really smart and helped us to figure out how to make a better experience for the students. And, you know, they've been doing this for a long time. And so to really use that kind of knowledge to our students' advantage, I think is just, it's a really great thing.
Okay. My other question is, are you concerned about the industry changing too fast? Because that's one thing, you know, I talked about earlier about how, like, yeah, I went from my master's in technology, which changed so fast, and the school would be hard-pressed to keep up with everything, right? So are you concerned about the industry changing so fast and not being able to change curriculum because you have to go through the, like, an accreditation process or a review process?
So I'm not – our industry does change quickly, and I'm not worried about it because we have thought this through with the framework, the structure of our curriculum, the way we have developed our curriculum, and the way we have put things into practice. So, for example, our courses are very different. They're not our students take one course at a time. The courses last 3 weeks. The first 2 days of that course are industry grade workshops that are taught by industry experts. So we actually bring in, like, the people who are, you know, writing the books, speaking at the conferences, creating the new practices, the best, you know, the best practices, all of that. We bring them in to Center for 2 days to spend the 2 days with our students, to teach our students the same kind of workshops that they would be teaching professionals. We have the partner company mentors and other professionals coming in to work with our students and to get that same industry grade workshop with the students at the same time. So our students are hearing from them what's the most relevant things going on in their organizations. And our faculty, so our facilitators, are actually attending those workshops as well. So they're constantly being kept up to date. And so every 3 weeks, this is happening for 2 years. And this is part of the reason that I'm not totally concerned, because those industry experts, they are absolutely keeping up to date. Right? Because their livelihood depends on it. They keep up to date. They bring that information and that knowledge and all that brain power here to Center. The students get to learn from them. Our facilitators are constantly being kept up to date. So they are, our facilitators aren't being left behind. We have made sure there are resources and time for them to have their professional development continue for their entire time they teach. That is so different than and I've been a professor. I know this is different than a regular university setting. The other ways we are really making sure that our students have the opportunity to make sure they're learning what's relevant is, well, our facilitators are they're not only going to these industry grade workshops, but they're professionals and they have professional contacts and they're constantly in the field talking with people, meeting with hiring managers, all of that kind of great stuff. And our curriculum is built, so we have a number of core courses, and then towards the end of the curriculum, we actually have special topic courses, kind of directed topic courses, and internship courses worked in. And that curriculum has not been set. So say a company comes to us and they are like, you know, wearables are going to be our next big thing. And if your students could just really understand these kind of principles around that, we would be able to hire them in a second, you know? And so, well, we'll develop a whole course around wearables. So our students are totally up to date on it. So when they graduate in the next couple of weeks or next couple of months, that they have the skills they need to go be really great assets to that company right away. And also the core courses, even though they are core, they are developed in a way where the competencies are general enough that it doesn't matter which software, you know, so which prototyping tool. It's like, I feel like every single day I'm like, here's a new prototyping tool. Well, I don't know which one's going to be the one that's going to be the most important in 2 years. So, but the competency is around the students understanding how to use prototyping tools that meet the needs of that project, those kind of things. And so it doesn't say you have to use this specific one that now, you know, 6 months into the program is now obsolete. Those are some of the ways we're addressing that concern, because we do know how fast this industry moves. Mm-hmm. And it's very important for us to make sure our students are up to date. And so is our facilitators and our staff.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that's like, that's way better.
that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, just bringing people in, bringing the experts in, having the fastest internet connection is also not too bad too. So
it's really, it's, yeah, you get used to it, and then you go to some hotel Wi-Fi and you're like, oh.
Curses. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. We just got Google Fiber in Austin. So
it's, it's sweet.
it's pretty sweet. So you mentioned, I think you mentioned earlier that you have, you're still working on things out. So you haven't, you have yet to get to your first cohort of students in.
Yeah.
When do you expect to have that in, or, and are you accepting applications?
Oh yeah, we are definitely accepting applications. So we've been accepting applications for a while now. So we have a number of potential students, so applicants in the pipeline. They're in the process. Some of them are just ready. They're completely through the whole process. They're just waiting for us to figure out, you know, this financial aid situation, this piece to be able to start the school. And so what's really cool about our applicants currently is they're so diverse. Different ages, different ethnicities, all the genders, you know, like, it's so neat to, without trying, we have this really nice, diverse applicant pool. And that is something that speaks to us so much, because we believe that diverse teams really create stronger products, because you're taking into consideration different things. So to answer part of your question is, we hope to start in the fall. That is our goal. So fall of 2016. Now we have said, if you've listened to other podcasts or if you've talked to me before, we've tried for fall before, but again, the student financial aid hurdle, it was just something that we were having a really hard time jumping. And within the last few weeks, we have seen some really big hope and light at the end of the tunnel for this. And so we're looking for fall of 2016. Now that could change, but right now that's our goal. And we are definitely accepting applicants. And the applicants, our criteria is really interesting. You do not need to be a designer, you do not need to know technology, you do not need to know how to code. What you need to be is a lifelong learner, so somebody who likes a good problem and are willing to go out and try to solve it, and that gets kind of excited by that. Someone that's gritty and tenacious, so that stick-to-it-ness, someone that'll see a project or a problem through till it gets to a solution. And there's basic things, like you need to be 18 years or older, just because that was a lot easier to get through the state of Tennessee at this point. Speak and write fluent English, because the hiring managers are looking for that. And again, we want to make sure that all of our students are hireable when they graduate.
How about emojis?
Emojis, it's really important.
Okay, good.
You need to, I was actually just in our Slack channel today. Yeah, it's pretty important. And if you can make custom emoji for Slack, but it's like, those are the kind of things we're looking for. But the students don't have to come with a college background. They just need to either have graduated high school, have their GED or their HiSET, which is now the high school equivalency test thing that they're doing instead of the GED. So, the application process, because that's mostly what it is. The application process is really great. You get to know the facilitators that you'll be working with as your facilitators through the process, and they get to know you. And it's a really intense but really awesome process.
All right, that's awesome. And how many students are in a cohort?
In a single cohort, 36 students move together. And that's the max. Okay. And what we do is we aim to have about 12-to-1 student facilitator ratio. Okay. So if for the first cohort, we have 24 students, we probably have 2 facilitators. We're hoping to have a full 36 cohort. That's really great. Which means we have 3 facilitators. And at this point, that means we would need to be hiring for a 3rd facilitator. So, and then we plan to scale up pretty big, pretty quickly. Within 5 years of starting, we're looking at around having about 500 students enrolled.
Wow. At different levels of 2-year program, right?
Yeah, they would be starting. So we don't have to, since we're not traditional in a lot of ways, we do not have to start on a specific time of the year. So we would start having cohort starting every, 4 to 6 weeks, that kind of thing.
Okay. Cool.
But for now, we're starting with one cohort, hopefully for the fall. If anybody's interested, we are accepting student applications, and it's going to be an exciting, I think the first cohort is going to be a pretty exciting time, because those students get to actually, I think, help start shaping the next cohort's experience, in a really real way.
Do you accept people who've done six single pixel GIFs?
Yes.
Okay.
As long as they're willing to understand where things have, I have to say yes, because how many of us did that? I had to do that. That was the only way back then. Yeah. Before, there was way we just times were way. Different.
Yeah, I think things were different back then. Okay. So it was application process and an interview process, I assume.
Yeah, so it's an interview process. The application's more like, give us your first, last name, email address, maybe your Twitter handle, and then it's this. It's basically you have to write a 250 word essay about a significant learning accomplishment.
Okay.
And so we've had people tell us about how they've learned how to fix up their house, or learned how to fix their car, or learned how to bake or sew. When we're talking about these learning, it's what did you teach yourself? And how do you follow through on it? And when you face those challenges that we all face when you're learning something by yourself or, for the first time, how did you approach those challenges? How did you get through it? Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things we're looking for. That's much more interesting to us than a whole bunch of just random fields of information that normal applications have on them. Mm-hmm. And then there's phone calls and Skype or video conferencing interviews with the facilitators, and as you go through the process, they get a little bit longer and more in depth.
Okay, and then I assume there's affordable student housing nearby.
We are we're actually constantly working on that.
Okay.
Chattanooga is one of the other reasons we're doing this here. Chattanooga is way more affordable to live than most big cities. We're a mid-size city. Our mayor likes to say we're the best mid-sized city in America. Sometimes I call us a small city, and I know I'm going to get in trouble. But we've got a small city feel, and a mid-sized city is where our numbers are at. And there's all kinds of different housing. So some of our students, are single and looking for a roommate. And some of our student applicants are married and have two kids, and they're looking for a totally different kind of house. Or like a house versus an apartment with a roommate. So we have... we have resources for all of those.
Awesome. That's great. Cool. Well, and where can people find out more information about the Center and apply or help out in some way? If they...
Sure. They can go to centercenter.com, and so this is where it gets tricky. This is the spelling. Yeah. Go American English, then the Queen's English. So CENTRE.com, and you can find out things there. It's the same for Twitter. You can always find me on Twitter mine's at Jensen in Minutes, JensenInMan. And hopefully those links or something will be in show notes, because that gets last name's complicated too,
No, no problem. Yeah, they definitely we'll put the stuff in the show notes. Sure. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule trying to get things set up for students. It sounds awesome.
Thank you.
And I'm jealous of all the students who will be taking place, getting to learn there. It sounds awesome.
Well, thank you. Hopefully you get to visit Chattanooga and see the school and come share your brain knowledge too.
Cool. Well, yeah, I guess it's too late. Full disclosure, I contributed to the Kickstarter back in the day. So
yes, your name's up on the wall.
So
we have a wall of awesomeness, a physical wall of awesomeness, and
there you go. Of course, you have to have one. So
you do.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you soon, I guess. And I want to check in, and after you have your first students, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you so much.